Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Shark Cast Radio, a weekly podcast on all things Cronulla Sharks, brought to you by the legends at Dyson Logistics, coming at you live and loud from the Royal Motor Yacht Club, Port Hacking, and supported by the legends at Cripps and Cripps Real Estate, Jason Hawes. Specifically, I am one half of the podcast, Shark Fanatic Newman, and I'm joined as I am every week, teleconferencing, social distancing, isolation, by my fellow Sharks fanatic, Sydney singer-songwriter, and Fox Sports stats man, Sam Shenazzy. How are you, mate?
I'm no longer the all-round nice guy, given that our friend Chad Townsend clearly is. What a great man. He gave us so much time last week. I'm good, Newman. I'm here in isolation. Am I good? I'm not good. I'm just, I'm getting by, actually.
Yeah,
starting to feel
just,
it.
Everyone's just getting by. Now, obviously, there's no football to talk about, so we are going into our deep dive series. The plan is we're going to talk about eras of the club, specific eras, go back in time, fire up the DeLorean, and today we're going to talk about season 2008, the season that could have been. And we've got an interview with Luke Cavell. We'll be talking about that detailed. But what are your memories, Sam? What are you thinking about? 2000 and year of Kevin 07 leading it was the year before that, and you know, it was a different time. No COVID, that's for sure.
COVID-free. I think swine-free as well, pre-swine flu. 07, 08 were solid years in my world. Musically, my work life was starting to heat up. Had a lady. How about that? Had a lady. I'm sure our listeners are just, riveted.
Riveted.
Football-wise, 08, very memorable. Could have been a lot better. We're going to get into that after Cavell's spiel on everything. We've got a lot to talk about. But why don't we step back 1 year, Newman, to 07? You cool with that?
Yeah, man. We've got to set the scene. This is how you do these things.
So, the great Rick Stewart came to Cronulla in 07.
So, that was Ricky's first year after a underwhelming 2006 under Stu Raver.
Yeah.
And Ricky Stewart was, there was quite a bit of hype around him coming to the club.
Yeah, he was a winner. He won in his first year, 02. With the Roosters, champion player.
And his reputation was a little bit different. Now he's got a reputation as really cranky, and he's done some things at various clubs that have been unsuccessful. But at this point, he'd only been to the Roosters, won them a comp, and then left. And people were surprised that he was leaving.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at the Roosters, it was going downhill year by year. And aside from the Canberra reign currently, that's how his coaching career has gone at each club. But aside from 07 into 08, which we'll get into, but obviously after that it was disastrous. But 07 came to the Sharks. We ended up winning 10 games, losing 14.
Okay, look, before you tell me about how they went, who were the players on the books in 07? Who are we looking at? Kamali? Cavell?
Yeah, well, for example, round one. I'm going to read out round one real quick.
Yeah.
Brett Kearney, Fraser Anderson, Ben Pomeroy, the great Josh Hannay, our friend Luke Cavell, Dykes Kamali in the halves, Ben Ross, Kevin Kingston, who I loved, Craig Stapleton started, that was your front row, your back row, pretty decent, Reece Williams, Lance Thompson, Greg Bird, and the bench was Luke Douglas, Jacob Selms on debut. Cam Serralda, the next Sonny Bill, and Isaac DeGoy. So, a solid team.
It wasn't the strongest team in the comp by any stretch of the imagination.
No, it wasn't. If you look at their run, they started 1-3, so it wasn't great.
They won round one, though. I remember that in 2007. It was the rainiest night of all time.
Against the Panthers.
Sharknado night against the Panthers when we used to win in round one.
I remember those times. They won 6 of the opening 10, so not too bad. But then there was a horror stretch from round 12 through to round, round 22 when they won the game.
The era when we'd have like a 10-game losing streak just about every year.
Beat Para at Para with the Brett Seymour field goal. Close out the season with 2 wins. So
I remember that game. I was down the snow watching it in the LJH, Lake Jindabyne Hotel. Ah, glory days, Samuel.
So that was 07. A lot of potential there. That losing stretch really killed off any finals hope, but you could see they had a team that was not the worst in the comp. And under Ricky Stewart, they did lose a lot of games pretty closely. So they were in the fight, which is something that Shane Flanagan would also have the power over. His players always been the fight, so they weren't getting thrashed.
But the media hype around the team was, you know, if you look at the Sharks, they had that 10-game losing streak, but they actually weren't that bad. They finished 11th, but had a positive for and against of plus 60,
right,
which was just unheard of. So if you fast forward to 2008, they also finished in equal first with a plus for and against of plus 60. So the narrative was that they were a good team, punching above their weight, that were unlucky, that couldn't win the tight games.
Yeah, the word unlucky doesn't sit well with me in rugby league terms, but I know exactly where you're going.
I'm only reporting what the media reported.
I love Rick Stewart's, which we'll get into maybe later, but Ricky Stewart's, his presses were always about how proud he was of the effort and the boys. And
we lacked finesse, he used to say that all the time.
He would never go against the boys unless it was some sort of disaster. Yeah. He would always stick by him, which is what he's well known for. It works. The players buy in. You'll hear Cavell talk about it a bit later on about how tough a season it was, but also you can sense that he enjoyed it, enjoyed that new determination at training and the physicality of it all. Should we start off in 2008? Talk about the start of the season?
Yeah, well, we've set the scene. That's what happened in 2007. I mean, we got close, but were never, ever good enough. Finished 11th, didn't make the finals, bludger of a year, write it off, move forward, 2008.
Start off with two really tough games, and I'm guessing, Newman, you can confirm this for me, we play the grand finalists in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, and I remember going to Brookvale for round one, and Paul Gallen was on the Footy Show, the then Footy Show, so we're really going back in time. There was this show called The Footy Show,
right,
and people liked it, right, and it had Fatty Vaughton on it.
Let me guess, a lot of guys in dresses and that kind of thing.
But before the game, they asked for players' predictions, and Gal said, "We will win round one against Manly," and everybody just laughed. Like, the audience laughed, the panel laughed, and he's like, "Okay, laugh at us." And then they came out, and they did a number on Manly at Brookvale, and it was great day. Oh, it was unbelievable. It was a packed house at Brookie.
You were one of the 15,424 people at the ground. Did you go with the CWSE?
No, I went with our mate Craig Myers, yep, and Kane Dyson.
All right, good crew. So,
and Blaze in Singapore.
The Sharkies, they never win in Brookvale. At Brookvale, we know that. So that was a rare win. And the next week, they go down to Melbourne, and they play Melbourne, who's always tough down there. And that was a very memorable game, very spiteful game.
But that was also, and I said it in the interview with Cov, Melbourne were under extreme salary cap scrutiny at that point. Their squad was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
they were super. They were,
you got Slater, Turner, Chambers, Folau, Quinn, Aiken, Russell Aiken, Kronk, Lima, Smith, White, Smith, Hoffman, Johnson, Gaia, Blair, Manu, Takatizi on the bench.
Yeah, I mean, but that was a great performance. Ben Ross, our mate Benny Ross, getting in a punch up.
With Brett and White. We did a number on him. Both he and Brett White were sent off in the 66th minute. Brett Camorley wins the match in the 79th minute with a winning field goal.
We were up 18-0 at one point, I believe, doing a number on
it. No, not 18-0, but we were up 14-0.
14-0. Yeah, we're
good
up.
Work. Good work.
We
yeah,
were up.
Yeah.
I know there's someone listening to this going, oh, they can't get the details right. Like, this was a long time ago, people.
I know exactly who those people are. So, we knock off the grand finalists 2 weeks in a row away from home.
Yeah.
I specifically remember it was probably the last time I really carried on like a, well, actually I should put that with an asterisk next to it, but really carried on like a moron watching football. And I think I've told this story before, but my nephew was super young at the time, and my brother and I were watching the game in the family house, and my nephew would have been like, I don't know, 2 or 3, I should know, I don't know, he was young. And I remember being so passionately involved with the send-offs.
This is the Melbourne game.
Yeah, the Melbourne send-offs, and you're up on your feet, and it's just, you want to win so bad, and this is the year. And my brother just turned to me and went, I don't know what the word was, but he was like, you're acting like a goose and you're scaring your nephew. And I went, okay. Noted. And I never do that ever again, because it's like, why should I carry on like that around someone else and make them feel awkward? I was pretty into it.
Man, but in all seriousness though, like, I was going off when we won that Melbourne.
It was that game, yeah.
It was like one of the best games in history. And I was watching it at a mate's place. It was a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
With my then girlfriend, and we all were like into the game, shouting at the TV and that. And then when it was over, we're like, okay, let's go celebrate. And we went to Spectrum, went to a punk rock nightclub.
Spectrum, that happened. Yeah. That's worth.
And then Blaze from Singapore met us at Spectrum, and he was like so pumped. We were drunk as, and he was just grabbing my head, and he's like bald, and he was rubbing like his unshaved, you know, as his head had the growth come
stub.
Back. He's rubbing the stuff like he's so pumped up, and he was dancing like crazy.
What was that game?
It was just this moment where we thought, hello, we could be onto something here.
Put the brakes on, go up to Rabina, lose to the Titans 18-4.
Back to Earth. I can't remember that game.
What you will remember is round
Hang
four.
Hang on, was that the game Preston Campbell?
No, that was 07. That was a year before.
Oh, okay.
You remember round four, one of the great derbies at Homebush.
Yes, I remember.
Because, you know, Homebush is so close to where we live. And Young Goodwin in the corner.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, goes to Golden Point. Jason Rolls, who's one of our favorites on the podcast, gives away the penalty, and the great Kolb kicks the winning field goal.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that. I used to go to a lot more games back then.
I think it might have been a Saturday, 5:30, something like that.
I had a corporate box at ANZ then, so it was a good night out.
So, yeah, actually that was a memorable game. Great finish.
But another tight game, right?
So tight game, yeah.
What was the final score in that one?
That was...
So we beat Manly by two.
18-16.
Yeah, we beat Manly by two. We beat Melbourne by one, and we beat the Dragons by two. So all of these victories are seat-of-the-pants stuff.
So in the opening 10 rounds, there's not a bigger margin in the game than 8 points aside from the Gold Coast game. So they're all close games.
So by this stage of the season, we've really...
So round 10, we've got... 1, 2, 3, 4. We've won 7 from 10.
Right.
So we're looking pretty good.
We're looking pretty good, but we've really nailed that. The Sharks
they
want to get into an arm wrestle. They want to defend their way to victory. They are now a tough team to beat, and they'll back their defense against anyone.
Absolutely, which was incredibly important given the year before it had gone so wrong and we'd gone so close. So I think at this point, Newman, we might throw to Luke Cavell, and then we'll come back and dissect the rest of the game and talk about a whole bunch of more stuff about the memorable 2008 season. So let's just cut to Luke. Here comes Luke. Great interview by my colleague, Adam Newman, and we'll come back. So don't go anywhere after Luke's finished.
Porter, straight at them.
Okay, Shark Cast on the road, and special where we talk about season 2008, the season that could have been, and I'm joined by point scoring behemoth of that year, Luke Cavell. How are you, mate?
Pretty good, mate. Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's go back in the DeLorean, fire it up, and go 12 years back. Well, 13. 2007 was a bludger of a year. We developed a reputation as a tough yet unlucky side. I believe the general narrative was that we were good enough to get close but couldn't win many games. Was that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it was pretty fair. We were always in it. We always struggled to score points. And yeah, we just couldn't quite get over the line, and then we got to 2008, and it sort of tables just slightly turned, where our defence was definitely sort of the key to our year and performed really well, but we still struggled scoring those points, but we were getting away with low scoring games and winning them by 2 and 4 points.
So talk to me about the start of 2008. 2007 you finished 11th and 2008 equal first. Did you feel like there was a corner that had been turned and something good could happen? Or talk to me about the feeling around the group.
As I mentioned before, it all just came from our defence. We were very confident in our structures that we had with our defence, and we knew that if we could score, you know, three or four tries and get to that 18, 22, 24-point mark, we knew our defence was good enough to hold any team out.
So is that something you actively spoke about at training? You know, if we can score 18, three tries, we can pretty much beat anyone?
Yeah. Anything more than that we knew was a bonus. But, yeah, we worked really, really hard on our defence that year and with our combinations, and we just had a defensive structure that really clicked that year, and it showed for sure. You know, like you said, we finished up first, but it was only through for and against that but I think we ended up third on the table.
And how did you feel about that strategy? Did you ever think, geez, I don't know, is 18 enough? Like, you know, you're a pretty good student of the game. Did you ever think, you know, I'd like to be thinking we could score a few more points in this and not have a heart attack on our hands every week? Because I know the supporters felt that way.
Yeah, I guess thinking back, we were confident that it was enough. We knew our attack definitely wasn't clicking, and for whatever reason it was, whether it was our personnel that year or whether it was our game plan or our attacking structure that we had in place or our confidence with it, we really struggled to put teams away, but we just had this, undeniable confidence that, you know, our defence would get us through the game regardless.
So rounds one and two, you played competition heavyweights, Melbourne and Brookvale away. I mean, you would have been 1,000,000 to 1 to win both those games, but we came out and won them 16-10 against Manly and 17-16 against the Storm. That's a fair shot across the bow of the competition.
Yeah, exactly. And any team who can come away with those wins at the start of the season is definitely going to get a huge boost of confidence with the way their pre-season has gone and has paid off, and, you know, to try and continue that throughout the rest of the season.
Did you think when you won those two in a row, we can beat anyone now?
I guess it gives you that little bit of confidence, but at the end of the day, it's still only round two and you've got a long season ahead, and we just kept working really hard and Sticky kept pushing us really hard to improve, and I just remember that being a very intense season week in and week out through training and whatnot, and we knew the rewards were coming if we kept working hard.
All right, so it was a bizarre season. I'm looking at the scores from that early part of the season. 1-16-10, 1-17-16, lost 18-4, 1-18-16, 1-12-10, lost 20-21, lost 2016, 1-24-18. So the team averaged 18.8 points. So that number that Sticky came up with, we need 18 points. It's like you went on and averaged that anyway. It's kind of like a big advertisement for goal setting. You say, if we can score 18 points, we can win. And that's what you did. You scored 18 points.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, I guess it works both ways. I guess the way that you think people's mindset can react to that. And it's like, oh, okay, we've scored 18 points now. We don't need to score anymore. We'll just concentrate on defence. And I don't know whether that was, you know, I can only speak on my behalf, but, regardless of whatever it was, we knew we struggled with attack. We just, for some reason, just couldn't click and get points on the board. But, yeah, it just came back to our defence, and we didn't care if we had to defend for 79 minutes. You know, it was just one thing I knew that the boys would keep showing up and turning up regardless.
Now, it's bizarre. Sam's actually sent me the stats from Fox Sports. The team had the second worst attack of the entire competition and scored the fewest number of tries in the entire competition, yet still finished equal first.
Yeah, I doubt there'll ever be a repeat from any team in that performance, past or present. There could be, but definitely none that I've come across. And
obviously, like, is this something you were actively working on? Like, was Noddy getting the boys together and going, "Come on, we've got to sort this out"?
Oh, it's not that we weren't working on it, and we were just sort of going, "Oh, we don't really need to work on our attack at training, boys. We know we're pretty ordinary at it. We'll just focus on defence." We worked on it. Like I said, it was one of the most intense years I've ever been involved with, and Ricky was pushing us non-stop, but it just, for whatever reason, never clicked for us point-scoring-wise in attack, and that's just the way that it was, unfortunately.
Now, if we fast-forward further through the season, it starts to click at the end of the year, and starting with a good win over the Chooks, 20-0, then dispatched the Tigers 32-6, ran home with some big wins. So it started to click at the end of the season, but then things off-field started happening. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that I don't remember that Roosters win very well, but I definitely remember the week of the Tigers, because that was the week that it all came out with Greg Bird and the issue that he faced, and I remember we went into camp, I think it was over in the northern suburbs somewhere. We went into camp for a couple of days, and we even had, I think it was Andy Raymond come in and spoke to us one night at dinner, and just, we discussed about, the reaction with media and what's sort of going to happen. And I don't know, we just had a week that we all stuck together, and we sort of almost put ourselves in a bit of a bubble, and I think everyone sort of started writing us off, and I just remember that game against the Tigers where we played them at Leichhardt, and I just knew we were not going to get beaten.
Yeah, right. And then you went on to win 28-22 against the Cows, and then it was that great night out at Shark Park against the Raiders, winning 36-10. Missy Talapapa hat trick. Pommers was on fire. You're feeling like anything could happen.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely remember that. I don't remember the Cowboys game, but definitely remember the Canberra home game. We were that excited to be able to play a final at home, and we definitely wanted to move forward with that, and then out of it came the Warriors beat the Storm.
Yeah, so the Sharks beat the Raiders,
and then off.
Yeah, the Warriors upset the Storm, and then it was that week off where Buster Seymour injured himself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's always one of those hard things. It was one of those things that we didn't expect at the time, because, who expects first to get beaten by eight in the first round of the semis, and we didn't expect to be getting the week off. And I don't know whether it was bad luck or whether we just didn't really know how to handle it, but it was just one of those unfortunate things where, you have that week off, so you can't be intense for the every day for the whole 2 weeks leading up to your next game. And it was just a bit of a light-hearted session. Even Sticky wasn't even at the session. I think he was either having some time off to, get the game plan together, or he had some media commitments. I can't remember exactly what it was. And Flano was running training, and we were playing a game of soccer, and Danny Nutley, the the aggressive human that he is, but the kind is hard as well. Wasn't going to let young Buster Seymour take the soccer ball off him, and sort of said, "Stuff you, I'm getting this soccer ball back," and just gave him a bit of a bump off the ball, and that's when it all come crashing down.
So you go into the game with no Bird and no Seymour, but Cameron Smith's out for the Storm as well, but they've got, you know, Kronk, Brett White, you know, a star-studded team that would come under salary cap scrutiny. Are you looking around thinking this is hard, or did you believe you could do it?
I think we lost sort of Bird early enough, and we gained a lot of confidence from having those couple of wins, and we still hadn't lost any sort of confidence or faith with what we were being able to produce for the rest of that year. Like you said, we got better, if anything, after losing Bird, but I think once we lost Buster, that really put a dent in our confidence mentally. It's easy to be down, easy to be up for when one blokes out, but when you lose two of your key players, and Buster had a cracker year that year as well, and not putting any shame on Blake Green, but I didn't even know whether he'd even played first grade for us that whole year, and to be thrust into that's
the definition of being young bloke. Thrown in the deep end, isn't it?
Yeah, and some blokes thrive on that situation, but as a team, it wasn't a Blake Green poor performance. It was a whole team poor performance, and I think we just completely lost our confidence when that happened. And Melbourne Storm almost did what we did with just having Birdie out. You know, they gained confidence, and they brought Russ Aitken in, who was playing against his old club that he grew up with, and he had an awesome game, and yeah, they just brained us, mate. We were never in it.
So if Buster and Birdie play, you reckon it's a different story? You could roll them, score 18 points, and win.
Look, it's all too hypothetical at the end of the day, but I know that it definitely would have been a competition at least. Like, that was the disappointing thing for that whole year with everything that had happened and how well we played, and to go out like we did and not even put up a fight, one win away from the grand final. Well, that was the heartbreaking thing that came out of that whole season.
And when you look back on it, do you look back on a year of where you probably overachieved, you know, given the squad that the Sharks had compared to some of the top teams, or do you just think, nah, we stuffed it at the end, or a bit of both?
No, mate, we stuffed it at the end. It's probably not the right word, but we just lost two key players at really important times, and we just didn't have the depth that gave us the confidence to put up a fight and try and get through it. And it's one of those things that I always think back, because, you know, I always wanted to be part of the first team that, you know, brought the club its first grand final win, and the old shoulda, coulda, woulda.
It
doesn't haunt me, but it definitely plays in my mind from time to time when I think about back in the day.
Yeah, good stuff. And, all right, now I know you're at the skate park with your daughter just ripping. So you came to the Sharkcast annual party last year, guest of honour. Will you be a starter this year when we get the green light to socialise again?
Yeah, mate, I'm always up for some socialisation, especially after the amount we've been missing out on lately. I'd be keen as to get down there again for sure. I finally got back to Shark Park last year when Gal had his last game, and that was the first time I'd been back since I'd left the club and left Sydney, and Yeah, really looking forward to get back down there again.
Yeah, we had a few beers with your old man Brewy, didn't we? Brucey.
Yeah, we sure did. Big Brucey. And, same thing for him. You know, he had the time of his life after, you know, we went there for so many years and you know, I moved up to the Gold Coast as soon as I'd finished down there. And you sort of, you wish it was a bit closer and a bit easier to get to more often, but wasn't the case. But, yeah, definitely hope to get down there more often for sure.
All right, mate. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for taking us on what is a bit of a painful trip down memory lane. And you keep punching and we'll catch up when we can have a beer.
Too easy, mate. Look forward to it. Talk to you soon.
Good on you, Luke. You see you, mate.
Sharkcast Radio would not be possible without the generous support of Dyson Logistics.
Dyson Logistics provides tailored logistical solutions to meet individual client needs and is set apart by its personalized service.
Dyson has a strong worldwide agent network, enabling highly competitive rates. Find them online at www.dysonlogistics.com or call them 8399 1844.
Dyson Logistics, service delivered.
Eddinghausen and Green laying it on.
Well, I'll tell you, it is one of the best scrum moves you've ever seen.
Buying or selling a property is one of the most stressful undertakings that you can do in your entire life. Luckily, Sharkcast Radio is supported by one of the best and most honest real estate agents in the Sutherland Shire market and is an expert in the North Caringbah region. I sold my property with Jason Hawes from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate and could not have been happier with the outcome. Call Jason on 0410-417-450. That's Jason from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate, 0410-417-450.
They are dancing in the streets of Cronulla even now, from Caringbah to Sutherland to Miranda.
The Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking is a hidden gem of the Shire, situated on the banks of the beautiful Port Hacking, and is the best venue around for lunch, dinner, casual catch-up with friends or function.
They always show NRL games live on the big screens, and Sunday arvos are superb with live acoustic music in the beer garden while the boats frame the backdrop. And you mean, I love acoustic music, you know that?
Yachty's Bistro is open 7 days and nights, serving great food. And if you mention Sharkcast Radio, you get a free
garlic bread, baby.
The RMYC Port Hacking, Woolaware Road, Woolaware, or check out their Facebook feed to see what's on.
Twister, Green, kicks across the park, Sailor's on his own.
Welcome back to the show. That was Luke Cavell. Always great to catch up with Luke. He's such a genuine, nice guy. And one of the things that's been awesome about being on this podcast is developing a relationship with people like that. But I have to say, we were talking at the end about his dad, Bruce Samuel, who's one of the great men.
Yep.
Great guy to have Sweet a drink guy. With. Anyway, after we stopped recording, Cov told me that Bruce has cancer.
Right.
And he's just starting his treatment. So okay. We'll send him a big Sharkcast positive vibes in
Absolutely.
Hope that he comes through this on the other side bigger, better and stronger.
Hell of a guy who's raised a hell of a guy. So, yeah, we send all of our support to the Cavell family.
So what was your take on that, Samuel?
Oh, fantastic. Listen, good interview by Neums. Great just to get that insight. Like, we can yap on and we will yap on week to week, but it's great to have the guys who actually did it for all of our listeners. And I know they'll appreciate both of your time for doing that. Luke's always great. He was there. He lived it. He that was his job, to play for the Sharks in that year, and he was great. I want to point out that he was the highest point scorer of the year. He scored 15 tries. He had a 70.9% kicking rate. Scored 206 points, kicked 73 goals. A really integral part of the team that year.
Now, let me ask you, we went in we decided on the questions to ask him together.
Yeah.
And we decided to ask him how he felt about the season. Did he look back with it with pride, you know, that they punched above their weight given the squad and they finished equal first, or did they look at it as an opportunity lost? And he didn't even hesitate to say opportunity lost. Did that surprise you?
Not coming from someone who, as I said, lived it and was in the ranks. outsider looking in, and we might talk about it a bit later on as well, but just to do it now, they overachieved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's no disrespect to anyone at all. They overachieved with that team.
You look at that squad compared to the Melbourne squad and the Manly squad who were in the grand final, and we were a long way behind them.
Why don't we look at it compared to the 2016 squad who went only one game further?
Yeah. You got stars in every position just about.
Yes.
You got stars through to very, very solid journeymen, whereas in this team, 2008, you've got some solid journeymen, and would you say there were any stars in that team?
Well, I think, Gallen was becoming a star.
Yeah.
Bird was... I mean, Camorley was a veteran star.
Yeah.
So there's a handful, but let me... I'm just going to read this
there's
out real
no
quick.
Val Holmes.
No.
Jack Bird.
No.
Ben Barber.
Let me read out. And this is in order of the guys who played the most games. So Isaac De Goyce played the most games for the Sharks that year, and I'm going to go through in order down. Luke Douglas, Brett Camorley, Ben Pomeroy, David Simmons, Fraser Anderson, Luke Cavell, Brett Seymour, Danny Nutley, Adam Peake, Paul Gallen, Brett Kearney, Ben Ross, Missy Telepapa, Cade Snowden, Greg Bird, Terence CU, this is obviously the whole squad that played, Brian Norrie. Here come the emails. Grant Millington, Goodwin, Blake Green, Mitch Brown, Kingston, Paul Stevenson. Here's one for you, buddy. Dustin Cooper, Jacob Selms. Peculiar played a couple of games. Lance Thompson, Reece Williams, and the great Carlos Feliga. So that's the entire squad that played a game.
Only two players still playing. Peculiar and...
Who's your other one?
Millington's still...
Overseas?
Going on overseas.
So yeah, there's not a great deal of superstars. I will say... Paul Gallen averaged the most meters for a forward that year.
But he still was, at 2008, he still wasn't that New South Wales captain level.
He was
sort of 2012.
He was on his way.
He's on his way, but he wasn't quite there yet.
I think under Ricky, like 07, particularly 08 onwards, is when he started, becoming Gal.
It brings us to our next point. When we talk about the media narrative, the next media narrative is, the Sharks can win a close game, but they really can't score points.
No, they can't. So,
and that when you look at that back line, Pomeroy, Telepapa, Cavell, Kearney.
Let's look at some of these stats, Newman. So yeah, as we pointed out, we finished first on equal points behind Melbourne and Manly. We had the second worst attack in the regular season, so pre-finals. We averaged 18.8 points.
And scored the lowest number of tries of any club.
Scored the lowest tries in the competition that year and averaged the least line breaks, which often leads to a try, which makes sense. However, they had the fourth best defense. So that was obviously Ricky's forte. We averaged the most penalties as well, as in received.
If I told you that, you're a stats man. If I told you, okay, Sam, there's a team, it's got the fourth best defense.
Yeah.
The worst number of tries, the third lowest number of points, and the lowest number of line breaks, and the highest number of penalties. Where are they finishing?
They'd be lucky to finish bottom of the eight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucky? No. You would say that team finishes 10th to 16th. Surely.
Well, yeah, if you can't score points, I mean.
But they finished first. But it was laughable as a fan watching the game going, why can't we just put a team away? You'd be in this position. And Cavell talked about it. He said, we thought we could get 18 and defend our way out of it.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And I'm like, we get to 18. Why don't we just score two more tries and put our feet up? It didn't happen.
So we saw Dykes not at the club, and he was an attacking weapon. Noddy was a lot more into the kick type tries.
For your general, mate. He wasn't a running hard.
Yeah. He wasn't an attacking machine. And I think because, as he said, we could defend for 79 minutes of the match if we had to, and they would do it.
Hmm.
And you'd see him. And it was a Flanagan thing as well later in the 2010s that, like, build a wall, they won't get through. I mean, it makes some sense. But the frustrating thing is there actually were some guys here who could attack. So
I sympathize with... Back then, I was frustrated. I was just like, man... we turned the corner from close losses to close wins, and it's amazing as a supporter how in 2007 I was going, I don't care, I just give anything to win a game, right? And then now it's like, oh, we've only won by 1 point, I'd give anything to win a game comfortably. That changed like overnight. But I was so frustrated as a supporter that, you know, we were getting to 18 and then couldn't kick on to 26-30 until later in the year. That was frustrating the hell out of me. But I look back and go, that's pretty astute coaching by Ricky Stewart. He's looking at the squad and going,
yeah,
let's work on our defense.
Yeah.
We got a good goal kicker and a good halfback. We can score 18. Let's defend it.
Interestingly enough, Noddy and Brett Seymour each finished with 20 try assists each. Equals sixth in the NRL in try assists. So it's not horrendous there. Like they're creating opportunities.
Yeah. It's just no one else is.
that's a fair point. So they go on a great run, Newman. They go on a great run. Let me open the right tablet here. From round 12 through to 16, they win five straight. They beat Gold Coast, Penrith, Warriors, Para and Canberra. Three of the wins by 12 points or more, so not too bad there. And they're really looking to come home strong. There's a few more losses along the way. Now, do we want to go to... Let's go to... Hang on a second, Newman. Don't blow me away here. So, round 24. Let's go ahead to there.
Yep.
Play at Shark Park. I think it was a Friday night. We beat the Roosters 20-0.
Now, this is where the season turns.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
We go from being a gritty team that can defend its way to a one-point or two-point victory. Now we're ensconced in the top four. Teams have come up against us knowing that they're going to have a hell of a time beating us, and all of a sudden the attack starts to click and we start beating teams by a decent margin and we think, hello, there's an opportunity.
Yeah, as fans we start to get very excited and they go on a run, and they, as a spoiler, they do win a bunch of games in a row. So the Friday night, beat the Roosters at home.
Was that 20-0 game?
Yeah.
The one Covell doesn't remember.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that game?
I remember being there. I remember thinking this is really great timing to find some form. And like all years, and especially pre-2016, you do think this could be the one.
Hmm.
And you're buying in. And the crowds were buying in. The next day, unfortunately, things start to go awry off the field. And it's reported, and it comes out, of course, that Greg Bird has a domestic incident. And he's stood down by the club. And it's a very public process of what happens.
Let's be a little bit more descriptive. The reporting in the Daily Telegraph had come out that Greg Bird had glassed his girlfriend. That was what was being reported.
That was what was reported, yeah.
And then it was subsequently reported that he came up with this cock and bull story, yeah, where he tried to lay it off on one of his mates.
On the roommate, I think.
On the roommate, you know, sending the roommate a text message where he plays golf, I need you to wear this. And yeah, it was just very bad look all around.
Yeah,
now, it was worth pointing out that, yes, none of this was ever proven down the line. But at the time, it looked really bad.
And it still looks bad. And I know that it wasn't proven. And between you and I don't really want to get into the actual incident itself, because that's not our job, but it did derail everything in a lot of ways, from a public perception to a playing personnel perception. You've lost one of your best players.
Yeah.
No doubt. Like, yeah, Greg Bird, phenomenal, particularly at that time.
He was good.
That time, and offered a bit of an attack for a big bulky guy.
He was sort of around for so long at the Titans, and then he went to Catalan, and
he got a
reputation as just a guy that gets sent off. But he was a Origin and Australia mainstay at that, yeah, point. He was cocky, strong runner.
He was
runner.
What, top three in the squad?
Yeah, offload, you know, good player and an integral part of that squad.
Under Ricky Stewart, when he and Gallen played particularly together, you knew that A, you wouldn't lose the fight, and B, you had a really good chance of winning.
The Bash Brothers, they were called.
Yeah, especially for the Blues, they got that rep, but they carried it through to the club.
But he also had a reputation as a loose unit, and I knew him, and he was a loose unit.
Sure.
And when this all came out, everyone went, oh, God, the inevitable wheels are falling off.
Right. And as you said, there was a whole lot of, like, this happened, this didn't happen, this didn't, it was messy. So we're coming off a 20-0 win, and we're going to play the West Tigers at Leichhardt on a Friday night.
Now, at this point, I did my research on this, and I remember we hadn't beaten the Tigers of any stripe, for want of a better term, at Leichhardt for about 30 years, and we'd only ever beaten the West Tigers franchise once.
You've looked this up? You're good?
I looked this up.
All right.
At this point. So we it was like Leichhardt had been a horrible location for us, and we went and won easy.
I think also for the from a fan's point of view, because the press were all over us, we were already starting to think, well, I imagine a whole bunch, including myself, were thinking, this could be a bit of a derailment. I'm sure a lot of more positive people were thinking, we're going to keep going. So as Luke said in the interview, they went into camp. They had a Fox Sports person come out and talk to them about how to represent yourself in the media and what they're going to, the questions we're going to ask you and how to handle it, which I thought was pretty smart from Ricky Stewart to organise. Were you at the Leichhardt game?
No, I remember watching that game vividly, though. I was at my friend's holiday house at Borley Point.
Well, you like to go away back in the day.
Oh, I still love it.
Yeah.
It's killing me, this COVID.
Yeah, you can't do it now.
And this is what you can do when you don't have kids. You just, off you go.
So I didn't have kids and I went to Leichhardt.
But I remember the game well because I was like, I felt like we had momentum and then the wheels were starting to fall off. And I'm like, if they're going to fall off, it's going to be against the Tigers because they're our bogey team or whatever. And then we won easy and I'm like, I'm back on the wagon, man.
Yeah, so I was working at Fox and I, believe it or not, back in the day, we got to go to watch the NYC at the time and in inverted commas report on it, report stats and figures back to the office. So my gig that night, and it finished at the end of NYC, was to report on that game. So I was there with my then lady friend and my friend Matt from America, who some of you guys know, and it was his first game as a Sharks fan and an American. And we sat on the wooden seats on the opposite side of where they run out. And I remember...
The wooden seats in front of the hill.
Got there super early. They're the ones. And it turned out the CWSC were setting up shot right near me. And I didn't know those guys. I knew of them, of course. And I remember a particular young man. And I was like, buddy, can I sit here? And he's like, we've got all this. He actually had a raspy voice. Mate, we've got all this for CWSC. You're CWSC? I was, nah, man. He goes, you just sit here and we'll all cheer together. Hey, how about that? 3 years later, I'm friends with the chairman, Damien Irvine.
The CWSC had quite a bit of clout back then. Dane Wheeler started it. Damien Irvine was heavily involved. Dane Wheeler's got a massive network. And he'll quite openly say, you know, I wanted to put together a supporters club, so I got all my friends.
There would have been close to 200 that night in that section for them.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic. We were all singing along. It was great fun. And I also wanted to talk about that year they really peaked as an organization.
They had the great songs, you know, Put Your Hands Up for DuGuys.
They were getting, you know, media outlets talking to them. They had a Fox Sports 10-minute special on them. Like, they were creating noise, particularly amazingly for the club. The club had a very good reputation for traveling fans.
Yep. And that's what the CWSC was. I was there when they started it. And it was originally started because of a Tigers game, 2005, Benji Marshall goes nuts.
Oh boy!
At Shark Park, and there's more Tigers supporters in attendance because they're going on that amazing run.
I think that was the last game I walked out of.
Yeah,
Reno and I walked out. We're like, can't do it.
They were the last, you know, 2005, Benji Marshall, and you still see it on the Benji Marshall highlights.
Unbelievable!
They pumped us. And there were more Tiger supporters in the house than Shark supporters.
And that was it.
You could have heard a pin drop when the Sharks had the ball. And Dane was like, this sucks. We've got to do better as an organization. So he started the CWSC with a bunch of mates.
Yeah.
And were like, and he has heaps of mates. He's got a massive network.
He does.
And it grew from there. And but the idea was it was only away games.
Right.
At home. Now, the CWSC have their location in the cage or whatever at home games now, and it's a home game thing. It was purely an away game thing, the CWSC, to take 200, 300 supporters.
Mm. The bus rides were very famous as well.
Yeah.
A couple of shandies along the way.
A couple of shandies on the way. 200, 300 supporters, two away grounds, wearing the same thing, singing songs. This was unheard of in the NRL at that time.
Yeah, Newman. So we saw the culmination of Dane and his following CWFC, and he bought thousands of tickets in the 2016 final series. So great work by CWFC. I remember that night. It was fantastic. Talapapa scored in the 7th minute. We didn't look back. Brett Seymour was having the time of his life. And we were really, really looking good. We ended up winning that game 32-6.
A big win. Not a close win. And then we fast forward into the semi-finals. And the way the draw folds out is the Sharks are playing the Raiders, and that's back when we got a home final.
Yep.
And it was pandemonium in the Shire. Everyone's starting to believe, particularly the Raiders weren't even in the game.
18,252 fans at Shark Park. We blew them off the park in week one of the finals, 36-10. Missy Telepapa scoring a hat trick, and we were really starting to believe then, even though Greg Bird wasn't there. Quick story for you, Newman. I wasn't at the game. You believe that? Shanaz wasn't at a home final.
Wow, where were you?
Remember how we were talking about the lady friend?
Oh boy.
Wedding in Perth.
Well,
not mine.
This is my culmination of 2008. I was, for the grand final, I was at a wedding in Canada.
Hey.
So
lucky, eh?
Yeah, I know, right?
But
and the prelim. I wasn't in the country for the prelim.
So yeah, right, okay. So I wasn't sure how to handle it being so far away from home, aside from some severe anxiety. But I got my brother who was there to just text me updates. And I'm at the wedding and they're coming through and I'm like, This is beautiful. This is great. Yep. I'm disappointed I'm not there, but
yep.
Being in Perth, the game was replayed quite late. I watched it, time of my life. I then went spoiler free and I watched the next night, I think it was, I watched whenever the Warriors game was, I watched it really late, Warriors v. Melbourne in Melbourne.
Yeah.
I think it was first v eighth. Spoiler free, you know, I was in Perth. It was like 3 a.m. and I thought, well, they're gonna win, and I'm watching the game and it unfolds, the Warriors win. I'm yahooing at 3 a.m. We got the week off, baby. We're going to the prelim.
I couldn't believe it. I was going to play a game of sport, and there was a TV on just as we were warming up in the clubhouse, and I was in disbelief. Like, I was jumping up and down when the Warriors scored, and I think it was Michael Witt scored this try, and he was not putting the ball down. You know, that was going to win them the game. And he's sort of just in the in-goal going, I can't believe this is happening. Everyone's like, just put the ball down. But and it was like, hang on, do the Sharks get the week off? Yes, yeah. The Sharks get the week off. They're straight into the prelim. This is now, all of a sudden, you feel like it's your time.
Yeah.
And then
the week off. And so two things happened in the next 2 weeks that were significant to a degree. So Brisbane are beating Melbourne in Brisbane. And that's who we would have played if Brisbane were going to win. And Melbourne score this ridiculous try in the last second and Melbourne win. And we're all like, oh, we're playing Melbourne now. Because you wanted Brisbane.
Yep, wanted Melbourne. Brisbane. Yep.
In the same period of time.
We beat Brisbane that year.
Too. Yeah, yep. Yeah. In the same period of time, there's an injury training mishap, which Cavell spoke about. I didn't know Shane Flanagan was running the training session. So Shane's got a lot to answer for. But Danny Nutley accidentally took out Brett Seymour, yep. One of our star playmakers.
He was gone.
He was gone. They played it up a little bit, yeah, but then it was revealed he's done.
There was no literally. Ducks and Drakes like Cooper Cronk coming back he was not going to play.
So there are all sorts of thoughts about what could have happened with playing positions. If Greg Bird was there, he would have gone to 5-8. No dramas. Greg Bird's not there. Brett Seymour's not there. In comes Blake Green.
Yep.
I was happy to hear Luke Cavell not sell Blake Green down the river because in my mind, he let in a few tries. Nah, it's not on him. So we go play Melbourne at the SFS on Friday, the 26th of September. There's a crowd, Newman.
It's 28,000, right?
27,570.
Yep.
And like the grand final 2016, the majority are Sharks fans. I'm going to say it was the biggest Sharks crowd at that point for a long time. So pre-grand finals and stuff. Grand finals aside,
yeah.
There was a lot of Sharks fans.
Same as the grand final. There wasn't a lot of Melbourne supporters there.
It was similar to the prelim against the Cowboys 2016. You just felt like, oh my gosh. And they ran out. And at that point, I'd never heard a Sharks crowd like that. And yeah. It was brilliant. I mean, it didn't blow out for a while. But before half time, Adam Blair scores and it's 16-0 at half time.
And it's Melbourne had this capacity back then to play these perfect halves of football where you felt like you couldn't get out of your own end. Mm. They were just creating heaps of repeat sets. Missy Talapapa punches Steve Turner in the head because he's frustrated at fumbling a ball in goal. And you just feel like this isn't going to work. And we were never in the game, didn't score a point.
Forwards were dominated. Yeah. I remember, and we all love the guy. Worst game of his life. And we can say this because we're not bias towards anyone telling you how it is. Luke Douglas,
yeah,
a really forgettable game from the big fella, which was disappointing because hell of a player, hell of a Sharks player. Like, we love him. He's done so much for the club. Great person off the field too. But he wasn't alone. Blake Green wasn't alone. And it just, with the team that we had, which we talked about, that team overachieved, in my opinion only. The team that ran out, Carney, Telepapa, Pomeroy, Simmons, yeah, not a huge fan of Simmons, Cavell, Green, Camorley, Ross, DeGoys, Peak, Douglas, Fraser Anderson, Gallen, Nutley, Norrie, Snowden, Terrence, CEC. I mean, they had the big boppers there, but for whatever reason, they couldn't fire.
Yeah, and it's disappointing to think in retrospect, but I think our hope was false. I don't think that team was a premiership team now that we've been there and won it, but it was a great time as a club, other than that final game, and it was a great year as a supporter.
Fantastic year. Let me ask you this. If both Greg Bird and Brett Seymour, if they continue for the rest of the year, how far do we go further?
Well, we got to the prelim. There's only one other game you can get
into. Do we win the prelim? Do we win the grand final?
I don't think we win the prelim. I think what Cavell said, I think we would have been way more competitive, but I think Melbourne had gone up a gear by that stage. They had a superstar team. And then they got smashed.
Yeah.
By that was 40-0, right? So
the beauty is we'll never know. But I got to think that with Seymour there, who was in career best form.
Bird adds a lot
and
more.
And Bird, I really think we give it a shake.
I think we're more competitive, but I still don't see us winning.
Yeah, you think
I just don't
lift?
Think the quality was there to beat Melbourne once Melbourne had quote-unquote changed gears. So that was a trip down memory lane, Samuel. And the plan is moving forward that we're going to do some other eras of the club. Maybe not one single year, but eras.
See how we go, Neil.
And let us know what you think. Make sure you email us, sharkcastpod@gmail.com. And make sure that you send support our sponsors, the Royal Motor Yacht Club, Port Hacking, Dyson Logistics, and Jason Horse from Cripps and Cripps Real Estate. I have to sign off, I'm afraid.
You do, but there's footy coming back, allegedly.
How good? 28th.
Let's hope.
Let's hope. All right. And as we say every week,
go the Sharks. Sharkies! Sharkies! Sharkies!
Lights off because they're coming out with a trophy.